Radio City, John Grace and Rob Ross with you, and both of us are ill and coughing and schmutzing, and it's just unbelievable. And I don't know if the weather in New York, Rob, has been anywhere near as volatile as it has here, but it was 60 degrees 3 days ago, and right now it's 15.
Right. Exactly the same. You know, we had rain and then sunny skies, albeit windy, on Christmas Day itself.
Yep.
And right now it's 15 degrees. Yeah, it's just absolutely bitter cold out there. And wow, as a born and raised New Yorker, I can honestly say I've always hated the winter and I will never change my opinion.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, we got about 6 inches of snow. And when I say 6 inches, I don't mean that in the way that weathermen measure it. I mean, it was about 6 inches tall on the cars, which means it's about 2 inches of snow. But after watching what the folks in Erie, Pennsylvania have been going through for the last 3 days, where they got 4 feet in 36 hours, I remember those days. That shit ain't fun.
No, I've... As you and I had that conversation about the great storms of 78, yeah, I remember them all too clearly, and you're right. They're not fun, and I feel for those people.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we've gotten very, very little snow. We only had that minor dusting, what was it, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm fine with not seeing any snow for a while.
Yeah.
As long as it's a snowfall where I have to go out and get in the car, I'm fine. You know, because I have access to public transport. But if I need to go and get groceries or something, then I'm going to be really, really irritated.
Yeah, exactly. And well, the good news is now we can actually go out again because not only is the snow basically all melted at this point, but we don't have to worry about running into throngs of people doing Christmas shopping anymore. It's over. We made it. We lived through another one.
Well, you may have, but being in New York, here's the downside of everything. Well, going to work at my day job in the morning is quiet enough. Coming home in the afternoon is hell because all of the goddamn tourists.
Yeah, that's right. You have to live through it until New Year's. I forgot.
I mean, my God, these people just, I don't know what it is, but they come to New York and they act like such morons, and they're so belligerent about it. And that's why I have such a horrible attitude towards tourists, because they act like idiots. You know, they have no basic manners. You see subway car doors opening. Don't stand in the way of the doors. Move! People need to get off so you can get on, Nimrod.
Right, right. It's just like the elevator. You'd think it would be common knowledge, and yet. But, leading up to, I would imagine that Manhattan is just a no-go at this point, that you stay on Staten Island and don't even bother.
That's pretty much it. I mean, I just go to work, and I don't have to go anywhere except from the ferry terminal and walk right into the subway station, get on the train, and then take it 2 stops back into Brooklyn, switch, and grab another train for 1 stop to get to my job, which will be coming to an end this Friday, I'm very happy to say, because I'm taking on a new position in Manhattan. But the holidays are over, and it's in my old stomping grounds of the Village. So all I have to do is get on the R train the minute I come out of the subway, take it up to 8th Street, and then just walk down 2 blocks, and that's just fine with me.
Good man.
And you know, when the warm weather comes, because I've done it for so much of my life, I'm more than happy to walk all the way back down from the Village to the ferry.
Well,
get some exercise and enjoy.
Yeah, you know? Not bad. And if the weather cooperates, then yeah, everything is okay. I do have to issue an apology, though, before we leave Christmas entirely. I have to issue an apology because for all these years, I have been wishing people a Merry Christmas. And as a non-Christian my own self, I don't know if I was supposed to do that or not, but I always did just because it's the season. I didn't know we weren't supposed to wish anybody a Merry Christmas until Donald Trump said it was okay.
Well, first of all, I don't know if you've been reading the papers, but haven't you heard there's a war on Christmas?
Yeah, right. Of course there is.
That's number one. And I think that was just started by a lot of bad hombres, personally. But, you know, I'll tell you something. I was one of those that would actually and actively either not say Merry Christmas. I would say something stupidly obnoxious, but trying to be cutesy and say Happy Holidays. Or Happy Christmas, which if I ever utter a Britishism on this show, you have every right to reach through the screen and punch me right in the fucking mouth.
At least you weren't a hipster and wish people a happy Yule.
Oh, God, that's even worse. But then again, hipsters need to be put to death.
Right. So
that's number one. Number two, if somebody says to me, Merry Christmas, I'm going to say Merry Christmas right back to them simply because it's a nice thing that people will say to you.
Right.
It's like saying, hello, how are you? You know, as a non-Christian myself, when there are those that say, have a blessed day, I don't take umbrage at that because they're being nice. Well, they're being kind. And I would rather have somebody being kind than saying to me, go fuck yourself.
Well, right. And to get right to the point on this, nobody has a problem with it. Nobody has a problem with it except for six dyed-in-the-wool atheist assholes who want to be a putz to everybody. Those are the only ones who care. And the rest of us don't. Nobody that I know, Christian or not, has ever even uttered one foul word about any of that stuff. It doesn't make any difference. It's just a nice thing to say to somebody. But some people have to be dicks about it, so...
Right. I mean, the only time I'll ever be, quote, dickish about it is, you know, in basic conversation with a friend. Like when you and I talk about Christmas, I usually come up with my Scroogism because, as we all know, Christmas is just a commercial enterprise run by some billiard manufacturing company in the East. So, you know, I...
It is, in fact, a humbug. And that reminds me, you know what we ended up watching on... Christmas Eve, we sat downstairs and happened to find, I think it was on demand, I'm not 100% positive, but I found the Muppet Christmas Carol, and Michael Caine is just awesome. You know, it's the Muppets, but who cares? Michael Caine is great.
She was only 15 years old.
Seeing Alfie there playing Scrooge.
Goes off.
That's right.
See, I can't do Michael Caine, you know, but that's neither here nor there. You know, Christmas, in short, Christmas for us, you know, when I was growing up, was always a centralized holiday.
Sure.
That was the day off that everybody had, so they'd all gather at my house, at my parents' house, so that way we could have our usual family fight, because the last family fight was on Thanksgiving at my house.
Right.
So our tradition was, whenever there was a centralized holiday, gather at my house, and everybody would fight, and would become the same brouhaha year after year after year. Hence my opinion of Christmas is slightly jaundiced, obviously, for that reason alone. But at the same time, I had some nice Christmas memories over the years, certainly when I was dating my ex-girlfriend, God rest her soul, because Christmas was a big deal at her house.
Yeah.
And from the time we started dating, we always had a really nice time with a big meal, and she always made sure that I was part of the family from the get-go, which was very special. So Christmas has its merits. And if you're going to be an asshole about it, don't.
Right.
Well, and try to hold the leash tightly.
And here's a weird thing that happened, because over these last couple of days, there was a shift in U.S. foreign policy, because Donald Trump has absolutely zero attention span. And the weird thing that happened was he said that we're going to now recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And of course, immediately every Muslim in the world got all pissed off. But the strange thing to me about that is that Jerusalem has three distinct sectors, not two. There are three, and one of them is Christian. So leading up to Christmas, what does he do? He effectively wrests the claim to Jerusalem away, not just from the Muslims, but from the Christians as well. And nobody said anything about that, and I found that a little curious.
The interesting thing about Christians in Israel is that they don't seem to have any problems with the Israeli government. They all have a seat in the government, as do Muslims.
Right.
This is the part that everybody overlooks. Everybody has a voice over there. Everybody has a right to vote.
Yeah, the Knesset is full of Arab Muslims and everything. Yeah, sure.
Right. And the thing is, this whole thing with Palestinians is a farce, and the UN is a bigger farce. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I really appreciate Nikki Haley standing her ground for sure. She's one of the very few that I've ever seen have the tenacity to not even blink an eye at the UN, which is one of the most corrupt bodies ever.
Yep.
You know, when John Kerry was over there kowtowing to the Palestinians, you know, people really need to do their homework. There is no such thing as Palestinians, frankly. Mandate Palestine was the name of the land. And by the way, Palestine or Palestinian is a variation on Philistine.
Philistines, right. It was what the Romans, you know, used to call that place because it was full of Jews. So,
right.
Yeah.
But these people, you know, they were there along with Jews. It's always been a, quote, Jewish land, but it was occupied by the British as part of the Great Empire.
Which is always a good idea.
Right, and it was known as Mandate Palestine.
Yep.
But it's always been Eretz Israel. It's the Holy Land. Now, Jerusalem has always been the capital of Israel. Donald Trump didn't really do anything spectacular. Yeah, he pissed off people. Okay, shocking.
That's what he does, yeah.
Right. But the thing is that it's always been the capital of Israel, and it's not like they're going to run and move the embassy next week.
Right.
It's just that he's just saying it for what it's worth. Now, this whole thing with the Palestinian Authority, if you want to talk about why the, quote, Palestinian people are dying and starving, they need to look at their own leadership and look in their own backyard, because it's all them controlling these people. They keep these people uneducated, ill-informed, and completely drowned in their own sick propaganda, because these guys are money makers. They make more money than the Jews do. Okay, these guys know how to make money, and they get all their funding from other Arab nations. All this is, once again, is the idea of wanting to wipe Israel off the map. And I'll tell you something, if any politician says that, oh, we need, like Obama did, tell Israel that you need to go back to the pre-1967 borders,
oh,
fuck them.
Yeah,
and
right.
Fuck those guys. First of all, Israel right now is about maybe as big as Delaware. Now, you've got that one little tiny strip of land surrounded by 27 Arab emirates. Shut the fuck up already.
Right, and you want to make the smallest piece of that 9 miles across. That's a grand idea. That's absolutely perfect.
Well, that's Obama for you, and that's Obama's government, and that's somebody like a John Kerry, who is obviously a virulent anti-Semite, anti-Israel proponent. So whatever Donald Trump does that's pro-Israel, you're goddamn right, I'm for it. Am I a Zionist? You better believe it. And by the way, Zionism started with Theodor Herzl. When they first came to Israel, when the Arab tenants, along with a lot of the already there Jewish tenants, weren't doing much with the land, the Zionists came and made it viable by cleaning and tilling the fields and having the olive fields grow and make it profitable. Do your homework, folks. It's actually a fascinating history, but don't turn it into this holy war between the Jews and the Arabs.
Right.
Okay? The ones who are doing that are these so-called Palestinians. So I don't want to hear a fucking word about them. They're deserving of nothing.
Right.
You people want the money? Go talk to your leaders. Go talk to Hezbollah. Go talk to Hamas. They're the ones who are withholding a fortune that could make your area livable. And you could have peace with the Israelis. You have a voice in the government. All the Israelis ask is that you don't go blowing shit up, and they'll let you back into the normal sectors of Israel.
Right.
You want to work in the normal sector of Israel? Be a decent human being.
Exactly. And you look at what else happened leading up to and after World War II, when the Brits started drawing lines on the map and fucked everything up, because everything that we went through in Iraq, everything we went through in Iran with the Shah, all of that stuff could have been avoided if the Brits had stayed out of the map making business. But, you know, again, you have to know your history to be able to get deeply into
that
shit.
Right, which is part of, of course, the reason why I'm so anti-England, apart from the fact that they're probably one of the most anti-Semitic nations on the planet. And have always been so. And the way that they teach their children is the most thwarted way. And you know, like with the Irish, you know, saying that the Palestinians are right and that Israel gets everything. Really? Really? This is a nation that built itself up from nothing. People that were refugees, none of which spoke a common language. These were survivors of the most heinous form of genocide known to modern man. And you're going to sit there and say the Palestinians are innocent.
Well, yeah.
You really to redress yourself and your precious Irish Republican army.
One of the things that really stunned me when I went to Iraq back, oh God, it's 12 years ago now, is that, do you know, okay, what we call the northern regions of Iraq, what we call northern Iraq, do you know what the Iraqis call that?
I forgot.
Kurdistan.
Yes.
They call it that.
I worked for a company that was actually going to do a Kurdistan museum.
Yeah, right. And it's like, if the Iraqis are already cool with it, why is it that we're fucking around with it? It just makes no sense to me at all. But, you know, what are you going to do? And half of the reason the Iraqis do that is because they know it pisses off the Turks. So, you know, the one thing that we keep doing is we keep, you know, standing in the way of them participating in their favorite sport, killing each other.
Well, let them kill each other and not kill any more Israelis. Yeah, you know, right. I love how Europe likes to sit there and pass judgment on Israel. But meanwhile, in Germany, there's an influx of Muslims that have basically destroyed areas, no different than in France and in England. You know, I don't think it's wrong to say that if you stop and you look and you see a herd of people coming in and creating mayhem of the worst order, raping women, acid attacks, and so on and so forth, you kind of know who they are. You know, you can single them out after a while, and yet you're going to still sit there and say, oh, woe is them, when they're taking over your country.
Yeah.
You know, you need to learn a lesson the hard way, I think. And I have a feeling that certainly Angela Merkel is going to learn a very hard lesson. And France has learned a lesson. I don't think England has learned enough, considering they've had how many of these little attacks of, you know, insane drivers and knife attacks and blowing stuff up as they go along. Okay, you know, until something really heinous happens, be my guest.
Right.
Yeah, be my guest.
Meanwhile, we're growing our own white guys who pull the same stunt. We just call them Nazis. So, you know, it's just
the whole – just – you know, there is a – I hate the fact that they call up the word Nazis because, as you've talked about to the nth degree, Nazis are German, and that's that.
Right.
That's the Nazis. What we have here – are these lunatic, fringe, separatist, white, pride, nationalist douchebags.
Loser punks. Yep, pretty much.
Yeah. Scum of the fucking earth.
Now, on that happy note, there are some other things going on in the world, and one of them I'm going to skew way off. First of all, I don't know if we've talked about this much. I mentioned it probably a couple of months ago, but there's something going on now, and I am of two minds on it, because somebody asked me about the whole cord cutting thing, about getting rid of cable or satellite TV or all of this shit. And I've always been not a Luddite, but I'm comfortable with what I'm comfortable with. And I get the guide, and I get the, you know, the TV programs that I watch, and I'm starting to kind of the whole binge watching on demand thing. And then all of a sudden dropped in my lap this thing called Set TV. And I just started my trial today, just a few hours ago. It's 500 channels, and it's $20 a month. And they give you the Showtime and HBOs and the Cinemaxes and all of that stuff. The thing is, they say they're legal. I'm not so sure. But in the meantime, I mean, how do you not ride a wave like that when DirecTV is sticking it to you for $200 a month for the same package?
Or in our case, Charter Communications / Spectrum, who took over Time Warner Cable. With this, do you get internet and phone?
No. It's just the TV service. But I've already got good internet, so.
Okay. I haven't explored any other options, because the only things that we have available to us are either Time Warner Cable, as you and I've talked about. In New York, cable is divided between two companies,
right.
Period.
Yeah.
You know, most of New York City is Charter / Spectrum. A pocket of Brooklyn into Queens and then Long Island is Cablevision. Or Fios.
Yeah. But
that's
this
all
is,
you have.
This thing is, and apparently it's not the only one. Set TV is one of them, and there's three or four other ones out there cooking right now. And it's all IP. There's no cable at all. It all comes in through the internet. And you can use a, you know, a Fire Stick or a Roku or whatever and make it notice this thing. And as long as you pay the subscription, you get all the channels. So, you know, I can't bitch.
Well, get some more details and let's explore it further. Not just on the show, but send me what info you've got to see if it comes to New York, because that might be a way of saving some money. I mean,
it's everywhere.
We don't pay a ridiculous amount for our cable. The one thing that Spectrum did do is it cut our costs.
Oh, okay.
That was big, because I said to them, look, you know, we've had it for X amount of years. We pay our bills on time month after month. But you're charging extraordinary prices for channels that we don't want nor need. So how about you give us a better package?
Right.
And that's exactly what they did. So
that's cool. And in the same vein, I mean, with the on-demand movies and on-demand TV, we still have people that are willing to go to the theaters. And we talked about MoviePass a little while ago as well. I love that thing. But we used ours to go see the new Star Wars movie. Have you seen it yet? Because we mentioned it last time.
Right. I haven't yet because I've been too sick to just go out of the house, save for grocery shopping. So I was thinking of doing it this weekend, going this Sunday. I think Sunday would be perfect because we'll do the shopping for New Year's Eve. We're not going out. We're just going to have a nice, quiet New Year's Eve at home with our traditional, you know, shrimp cocktails, wine, a nice loaf of bread, you know, salad, a light dinner, nice dessert, you know. So we'll take care of that on Saturday, and Sunday morning we'll go to the movies.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, you'll like it. I don't know if you'll love it. I didn't. You know, I saw nothing wrong with it. It was fine. It was fun. It was a good time. And the story was okay. I'll tell you the one thing, and this has nothing to do with the story at all, so I'm not ruining anything. It's no mystery that you're going to see Yoda in a Star Wars movie. They turned him back to a puppet. He's not CGI. I was so happy.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yep.
Yeah, because I'm sick of CGI. It's too much of it, you know? Everything is all car chases and car crashes. You know, it's like that great line in Death Proof when stuntman Mike says, you know, well, long before CGI ever came along, guys who were crazy enough to get in cars and crash them did just that. Yeah. That's why a car was Death Proof.
Right. And that's, you know, there's something to be said for that because you can't do it yet. Maybe CGI will get there. Maybe one day it'll look real. It still never does.
No, it looks cheesy and it takes you out of the story. It really does. The one thing I'll say about this or ask you about this Star Wars, is it a logical follow on from The Force Awakens?
Yeah, I think so. It's a little tough. They juggle three or four different stories at a time that all eventually intersect. But I think it's easy enough to follow as long as you're paying attention to what's going on. You'll be cool with it. There were a couple of moments, and you've probably heard this by now, that there's a lot of humor in this one, much more so than there was in the last one. And most of it works. There were a couple of dull thuds when they tried to get a bit going that didn't land. I could see where they were going with it. And a lot of the stuff that they did that was funny were just funny little one-liners, like the Han Solo stuff from the first three movies. Those were fine.
Like I said when we talked about it in the last show, you know, having Han Solo do his borscht belt routine, you know, right. They sure as hell did Jew him up big time. Actually, they Jewed him and Princess Leia up pretty much. You know, the whole banter of, you know, it always drove me crazy when you left. That's why I did it.
Yeah, the Bickersons thing.
Oh yeah, like I'm only trying to help. Don't.
Yeah.
And he walks in and he goes, "Oi!" I mean, come on.
But I'm
obvious.
I meant the one-liners though, where he's like, when he cuts the I don't even remember what they're called. Those things on the ice planet. When he cuts the thing open and says, "I thought they smelled bad on the outside." It's stuff like that. You know, there's a few of those that are fine.
Well, all I can say is this: I'm going as a loyal fanboy and Jedi Master. So at least on the next show, I can give you my evaluation of it. And then we can talk more about it in depth. But, you know, it's funny because to this day, I have not set foot in a movie theater for a year. The last one being Rogue One.
Yep.
On Christmas Day itself. But I will say this much. The only movie of this year, since this is in essence our 2017 wrap-up across the board, the only movie that I saw this entire year that I actually liked and found entertaining and really held my interest the whole way was Kingsman 2.
And I didn't see it.
It's on cable now, or on demand, so you could definitely watch it. I really enjoyed it. I didn't think it was as clever because the first one was so different and so it was such a different story. It was something new and fresh. But it held my interest and it entertained me, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah.
I think it's a good fun 2 hours and change.
And, you know, I was kind of the same way with Wonder Woman as I am with Star Wars. It was fine. I wasn't bowled over by it like a lot of people were. Gal Gadot was very interesting to watch. I think she's great at what she does. But the movie itself, meh, okay, sure.
I mean, the facts are the facts. It, you know, you could have put any particular actor in there to play the role. It would have been the same movie. Doesn't really matter. She, on the other hand, has a certain kind of – she has that je ne sais quoi. She has presence.
Right.
She has that star quality. Never mind the fact that she's drop-dead gorgeous. She's also – she's adorable.
Yeah.
And she's really funny. Most people don't know – and that – oh, folks, she's Israeli.
Yeah, right. She's one of them.
She has a sense of humor.
Oh, you know what? I'm glad you said that because there's two books that I wanted to mention to you. One of them is called it's a history. It's the history of Jewish comedy. And I had the thing in my hands a couple of minutes ago. I don't know where the hell I put it, but it's really good. The other one. No, we should be. But the other one that I just I saw him pitching on Colbert the other night. John Hodgman showed up pitching his new book, Vacation Land. I love this guy. The more I see John Hodgman, the more I love everything he does. His books are outstanding, and this one's a little bit of a different tone than the previous couple. It's not part of the same sort of trilogy that he put together of fake facts. But this one's just a much more personal story, and it's still hilariously funny. And, you know, listening to him talk to Colbert the other night, and I interviewed him a little while ago as well, telling these stories and doing so in a way that's so completely New England. You know what he reminded me of a little bit is Spalding Gray. You know, a little bit less pretentious, but not much.
Okay. When people talk about Spalding Gray, they always refer to him as, cerebral, which is a nice way of saying pretentious.
Pretentious, yeah, right. But yeah, Hodgman is a lot more approachable than that, and yet he still has that same sort of funhouse mirror effect to everything that he does, and I think the guy's brilliant.
Well, that book of Jewish humor, let's get back to something that's in our natural wheelhouse. Or our, you know, genetic wheelhouse. What is in this book, pray tell?
It's everything. I mean, it goes through. It's basically American Jewish comedy. So there's a little bit.
Is there any other?
Well, no. I mean, you know, not really. But
I mean, let's face it. How many Jews in England are funny? You can't spot them because they don't have Jewish names.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah, they've all had to change them.
And they're all socialists. So. Yeah.
But, you know, in vaudeville, everybody was Jewish. When I was talking to the author about it, I said, look, you know, I've always split people into two groups. I've always considered that there are Marx Brothers people and there are Three Stooges people. And and all of them, all seven of them are Jews. So, you know, the entirety of American comedy goes back to the dichotomy between two different groups of Jewish comedians. And, you know, going through the Catskills and all of the early days of television where even if the guy on camera wasn't Jewish, which a lot of the time he was, all of the writers were. Woody Allen, Mel Brooks.
Carl Reiner, yep. Sid Caesar.
Yeah.
Milton Berle, Sheldon Leonard, Buck Henry.
Yep.
I'm just trying to think of everybody who wrote for your show of shows.
Exactly, right, in the Texaco Star Theater.
Right. But, you know, going back to, you know, Jewish humor and so on and so forth, I mean, you had Fanny Bryce, you had Sophie Tucker.
Right.
Because she was both a singer and, you know, comedian, so to speak. You know, you had the Yiddish theater.
Right.
Of course.
Well, and that's the interesting thing about this book is that the author is a professor of Yiddish language. And I ask him about that because all of the wordplay. I mean, the thing that got me into watching the Marx Brothers in the first place was watching this brilliant wordplay and the puns and all the shit that Groucho used to put together. And, you know,
which is incredibly subversive for its time.
Right. And it, you know, he said, well, that's true. And there is a little bit of that in Yiddish. There's a lot of because it's a melding of three different languages, there's a lot of that sort of wordplay that naturally goes on. But he said the other thing the Marx Brothers did with it is they would constantly remind you in very subtle ways that you were listening to Jewish comedy. You know, it was these little asides, like there was always, you know, one character. Well, take the Take a Letter to My Lawyer speech. What was the law firm? Hungadunga, 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 and McCormick. So it was like, hey, there's all of us, but we're really playing to you guys, you know? And it's brilliant. And I never really thought of it that way. But he said they would do those little asides to the Jewish audience to remind them, hey, you know, this is kind of for everybody, but we're you.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because you're a Marx Brothers guy. I'm a Three Stooges guy. So that's perfect then. But the thing is, I remember most clearly about the Marx Brothers, I always thought like Chico was so bad at being Italian because he sounded like a Jewish booby.
Right,
you know?
Right.
All right, via duck, via no chicken. All right, via duck. You know, he just sounds like, you know, he just came off the boat and, you know, now I want to get some latkes.
Right.
You know. The thing with the Three Stooges is their humor was – it wasn't so much of – needing to remind you, A, because let's face it, they look really Jewish. That's number one. And yeah. Number two, theirs was the physical comedy. And I think people really took to that, overlooking any and all possible Jewishisms, if you will.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, theirs was a visual comedy. You couldn't put the Three Stooges on the radio. You could put the Marx Brothers on the radio.
Right, yeah, because it would still work. You could still, but all of the sound effects and everything else, unless you see him hitting the other guy in the head with a ratchet, it doesn't work.
Right, you know, and of course, you know, when Curly would do his shtick, because he was such a physical comic, you know, I mean, he was really, it was also the thing about the Stooges was that they had an enormous sense of timing, since they worked so well with one another.
Right. You well, know? And later on, everything that Belushi did and all of the physical comedy that Chris Farley did later on all harkens back to Curly. He right. invented that stuff. They just, Belushi, you know, went off and put their own stamp on it.
Belushi was the first to say that that was one of his biggest influences, but Farley was a ripoff of Belushi. So, you know, but that's later SNL, and that's when it gets watered down and you know, it becomes a completely different thing. But, you know, it's also a lot of, you know, what you were saying about writers, even going into the 60s, you know, most of the best comic writers, whether they were TV writers or screenwriters, were all Jews. Mike Nichols and Elaine May.
Sherwood Schwartz.
No. The Brady Bunch, okay? He wrote the fucking Brady Bunch, one of the worst series ever created. You know, come on, that that's a scourge. That's what that is. Well, poo, a pox on him. You had that kind of deep-rooted brilliance that came from all these, most of them were all first-generation Americans, but they were very aware of their Jewishness.
Right.
I mean, fuck, Mike Nichols is a perfect example. Look at The Graduate. Yeah, we know his name is, what, Benjamin Braddock? First of all, the name's Ben.
Yeah.
Second of all, you look at him. Yeah. You're going to tell me he's waspy? I don't think so. That guy's as much of a wasp as you or I are, you know? Except you can't spot us because we don't look particularly Jewy.
Yeah, right.
But Dustin Hoffman, you better believe he looks Jewy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but everything he says and does comes from the perspective of a neurotic Jewish kid.
Yeah.
All of it, his mannerisms, even his, oh no, Mrs. Robinson, oh God. You know, it's like, what did you give you bad gefilte fish or something? What the fuck?
Oh, man, too much. But yeah, you know, it was always there. And the book itself is pretty fascinating. So you got to pick that one up before too very long as well. And that's, you know, maybe that's what we need more of, you know, more Jewish writers on TV and life will be better.
Oh, haven't you heard, though, the Jews control all of the media?
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
That's
well,
right.
You know, I haven't been getting my monthly stipend from the International Zionist Jewish Conspiracy lately. Maybe that's why I'm pissed off.
I'll make a phone call for you. I know people.
I appreciate it. Oh, man. So what else is going on in the world, man? What are you looking at? What's catching your eye?
You know what? Because I've been feeling so lousy the last 2 weeks, nothing in particular, but let's point out a couple of things. Today is a very sad day on the musical calendar. It was on this day in 1978 that Chris Bell died.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So it's the 39th anniversary of that. And on the flip side, tomorrow would have been Alex Chilton's 69th birthday. So you know I'm going into that big star cocoon for at least 48 hours just to, you know,
yeah,
get it out of my system. Funnily enough, because it's the year end, I was thinking, because everybody's doing their year end lists, there is nothing from this year that really knocked me out where I'd want to actually sit down and compile a list of things. Yeah, there have been some great things that we've heard intermittently, but I keep coming back, especially because we've lost so many people, to the things that I love the most. You know, the Smithereens, Husker Du, of course, Big Star, the Beatles. I've been listening to the Beatles a lot lately,
mm-hmm.
Which very often happens around this time of year anyway. In fact, last week, just to give you a quick glimpse, Liz and I were coming back from having grocery shopped, and they were playing the Beatles Christmas records on the Beatles channel on XM. And, you know, some of them you can take with a grain of salt because it can wear thin quickly. But for whatever strange reason, I still crack up every time I hear the 1966 Christmas one. Everywhere It's Christmas pantomime, which begins with that annoying, you know, everywhere it's Christmas, ragtime shit that McCartney does on the piano. And then they do a bunch of weird sketches like Podgy the Bear and Jasper the Mouse and Please Don't Bring Your Banjo Back, or, of course, my favorite, Felpin Mansions. It's just bizarre and it's weird, but it's brilliant. And it's the only one that I can actually tolerate.
Yep.
Then, of course, Christmas Time is Here Again. Although after 3 minutes, I've had enough of it. I don't need the full 6 minute version. You know, it's kind of like Hey Jude, you know?
Yeah, well, it's still not Wonderful Christmas Time. So, you know, anything but that.
I want to bring up a really salient point about that, because there are songs that if there's a reason to hate Christmas, it's the Christmas music.
Yep.
And there are a couple of songs that I absolutely despise. And if I ever met the writers of some of these songs, I will kill them. The one that I think I hate second most is that awful The Most Wonderful Time of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Williams especially.
There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
That's got to be the gayest fucking Christmas song ever. It's just so fucking lame and wet. I hate that song. I love Johnny Mathis, but when he sings Do You Hear What I Hear? Yeah, I hear you singing this fucking song.
And I want it to stop.
Yeah, stop it. Go back to singing Chances Are. That's what I want to hear. Don't do that. You know, leave the shit in the hands of the really shitty punters. Now, Chestnuts wrote, was it the Christmas song? Nat King Cole was the king of all of them, no pun intended.
Sure.
But that fucking song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, I want to roast whoever wrote that fucking song.
it's not great. Well, and the one that I got trapped with when I was 13, my parents got sick of me and my sister. It's sick enough that they sent us to the Bahamas. And by ourselves, my sister was 18 and I was 13. This was a great idea. I might have just turned 14. So they sent us on a cruise to the Bahamas for 4 days. And I, of course, immediately met a girl, which was nice. And the one thing that I will remember from that cruise, in addition to her, because she was a really sweet girl, is they had this Christmas music playing on a loop, and it was not a big loop. I mean, I don't think they had more than 5 or 6 songs on this thing. And so every time you walked down the hallway in this cruise ship, it was playing one of the same 5 or 6 Christmas songs. One of them was Rosemary Clooney singing a song called Here Comes Susie Snowflake, for which I will never forgive her or anybody who had anything to do with that song.
Here comes Susie Snowflake dressed in a snow white gown. Tap, tap, tapping at your window pane to tell you she's in town. Here comes Susie Snowflake, soon you will hear her say, come
It is the shittiest piece of music I've ever heard in my life. And listening to her sing it over and over again was enough to ruin a Bahamian vacation.
Well, praise Jesus, I have never even heard of it.
Good.
So that is a good thing. There are Christmas miracles. Now, weirdly enough, being a non-Christian and always having the daggers drawn, as it were, for Christmas, there are some traditional Christmas songs I really do like. I do like Joy to the World. I like hearing it in a chorale type of manner.
It's very powerful.
For some stupid reason, I like Good King Wenceslas, even though I have no idea what the fuck it means. My favorite, I think, of all Christmas songs has got to be Christmas Time Is Here from the Charlie Brown Christmas.
Of course.
The Peanuts kids sing it. I mean, I love that. That makes me think it's Christmas time. That makes me feel Christmassy.
Vince Guaraldi could do no wrong.
You goddamn right. But the Christmas song I hate more than any other.
So if we're going to talk traditional ones that we're into, got to give a shout out to a good friend of mine, Peter Mayer, who plays guitar in Jimmy Buffett's Coral Reefer Band and is one of the nicest human beings you will ever meet. He invited me again this year he does this thing called Stars and Promises, where he'll go to different cities all throughout the month of December and he'll pick out a local charity in that city and do a benefit concert for them. And he ends it up in St. Louis because he's got family here and he spent a lot of time here when he was growing up. So he invited me to MC the show at the Sheldon this year, which was fantastic, as it always is. And it's always great to hang out with Peter. So he played a medley of the more traditional Christmas songs in addition to an Indian cantata that he learned when he was a kid, because he grew up, his parents were missionaries in India. So he kind of melded the three of them together. But one of the songs that he played is not only my wife's favorite Christmas song, it's one of my favorites as well. I Saw Three Ships, and just played it, only on the guitar, didn't sing it at all. And just hearing that melody come out of his guitar, the guy's an incredible player. It was, that one always puts a smile on my face. And again, I don't know what the hell the song is about, but it's still cool to listen to.
Honestly, that's another one I've never heard of.
I Saw Three Ships, really? Oh, great. Great to me.
There are just a bunch of Christmas songs, I'm sure. There are songs, traditional ones, that I probably like that I'm leaving out. You know which song I absolutely love? Actually, two. I really like Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow.
Yep.
I think that one's got a lot of charm. And I really, really like Baby, It's Cold Outside, which is a very subversive song.
Yes, it is. And a little bit rapey.
Yeah, a little rapey, a little risque, but that's okay because we're men and so what?
Yeah, right.
Hashtag you too.
Yep.
But the Christmas song I hate more than any other. There's no forgiving this. And it may be what causes his death is Wonderful Christmas Time.
Yeah. The party's on. The feeling's here. That only comes the time of year. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The choir of children sing their song.
Fuck you, Paul. You're my hero, and you did that.
Right.
Is that enough? Your commie partner, that long-haired hippie bastard, came up with that snide little, and so this is Christmas, and what have you done? Yeah. Hey, Lennon, what have you done? I'll tell you, double fantasy.
Yeah.
Shove that in your ass. Mark Chapman, the check is in the mail. But McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time, he should be beaten with wet notebooks for that.
Yeah.
He should be hung from the same gas station that Mussolini was hung from and beaten with rancid salamis.
Wow.
Product.
It is. It's a terrible piece of music. And so does that mean I should take back that copy of Shaved Fish I bought for you?
What? I actually have Shaved Fish. And the only reason why I have it, why do I have it? I hate that fucking commie bastard.
And that album is horrible.
It's, yeah, and you know what sucks even more? The Geffen follow-up, the John Lennon collection.
Uh-huh.
Because it sticks you with all of Give Peace a Chance. I mean, nobody told Lennon, guess what? Out of the four solo Beatles, you suck the most. Lennon was the last one to have a number one single. It took him until Whatever Gets You Through the Night to get number one single. Imagine wasn't number one.
You mean
Imagine No Possessions coming from the guy living up in the high tower of the Dakota, buying everything in sight. Fucking hypocrite.
Yeah, you mean Attica State never made it to the top 10?
Or what was that charming little song that is included on Shaved Fish? The single off of Sometime in New York City, the one that they couldn't play on the radio.
Uh-huh.
Think about it. Yeah, what a fucking power to the people. Fuck you, John, you pandering dipshit. You and your fucking weekly changing of your guard because, this week, Right on Politics is in protesting. Whoa, yeah, stick it to the man. And that's why Nixon wanted to deport you, you fucking communist.
Now, I've got to bitch myself because we didn't get to talk about this the day that it happened because both of us were under the weather and still are. We're both coughing and hacking and sneezing all the way through this thing. There you go.
But you know what? It's winter. It's to be expected.
Exactly.
Pissing about it being cold.
But why is it that every five-year-old on every playground across the country knows the difference between a caught ball and a dropped ball, but the National Football League doesn't have a clue about the difference between a caught ball and a dropped ball? Because the very same thing that happened at the end of the Steelers game when they were playing the Patriots happened at the end of the second or the end of the first half when the Bills were playing the Patriots and the Bills got screwed out of a touchdown for it. Now that game,
on the first play that the Jets had possession, because they started the game with an onside kick.
Yep.
Okay, the first possession they had, they got the ball down into the end zone for a touchdown, and they said he didn't have control of it, even though he clearly had control.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, and they even did the replay thing, and it was clear everybody in the world was looking at that catch in the Bills game saying, oh yeah, he had that, that's 6 points. And of course they come out and say, no, he didn't have control. Yes, he did. And it's just stupid. And of course, I mean, the fact that once again, it's New England who's at the center of all of this and the ones who benefit from it is no real mystery either. Because do you know how many offensive holding calls went against the Patriots in that game?
How many?
None. Not one. Really, what? None of them held. No, the whole game, not one offensive lineman held.
Huh.
It's horse shit. I hate the Patriots.
Maybe it's just me, but these last couple of weeks, every single game seems to be, in the NFL, seems to be one of, none of the teams seem to give a shit.
Yeah.
You know, there's absolutely no spark, even for the teams that, quote, have a dog in the hunt for the playoffs.
The Eagles, yeah, look what they did on Monday night.
You know, they're playing, granted, the Giants have had just an abhorrent season, and I'm not a fan of the Giants anyway, but you'd think to play for pride. Okay, they got things sorted out, they fired the coach, they fired the general manager, reinstate Eli Manning as their quarterback, and man, they were just embarrassed, and that's the only word to use is embarrassed, you know? Or the Packers, just because you shut Aaron Rodgers down, you get blanked by the Vikings?
Yeah.
Woof! What the hell?
I can't even begin to fathom. And you're right. I mean, nobody has any kind of handle on, there are no great teams at this point. And I even put New England in that basket because they just constantly cheat.
They constantly cheat and they're given, it's kind of like watching the Montreal Canadiens.
Right.
You know, calls that shouldn't be made against them are made, So they wind up on a power play and subsequently, they seem to score.
Right.
But with the Patriots, they seem to get away with the most obvious of fouls and never get called for it.
Yeah. And when Philadelphia, who's riding that incredible record, now granted they won on Monday night, but they won a 19-10 game against the Raiders, who they should have been able to put away in the first quarter, and they just couldn't, or didn't.
The Raiders who were quote-unquote planning on moving to Las Vegas. Well, with the way you guys are playing, you're not going to entice anybody to come and see you play.
Yeah.
That's a stupid concept anyway. The Las Vegas Raiders? Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, as much as I would like to say I'm done with the NFL, I'm still going to be back, and they know it, which is why they keep kicking me in the teeth.
Well, of course, that's, you know, it's like every time baseball or hockey goes on strike. Thanks for fucking us in the ass. You know we're going to come back anyway. We'll bitch and moan about it at first, but we'll watch.
Right. Well, and on the subject of baseball, moving off of football and into baseball, the winter meetings, again, was anybody interested at all?
Well, first of all, they came and went. I actually had to ask people, wait, when Stanton got traded to the Yankees, was that during the winter meetings? And the answer to that was yes.
Yeah.
That was, and you and I talked about the questionable financial deal that the Dodgers and Braves made. That was it. That was your entire winter meetings. Now there's all the talk about who's going to get traded to where. And really? The week that everything should have happened, and you're talking about it now?
Yeah.
Guess what? As a Mets fan, I don't give a flying fuck if they trade Matt Harvey anywhere. I'll be the first one to drive the son of a bitch out of town. That's how much I hate him. They got rid of Lucas Duda. I never want to see that guy in a Mets uniform again. I really don't want to see Matt Harvey in a Mets uniform anymore. Bring back Jay Bruce. I'm fine with re-signing him. Throw money at him. Bring back some lower-cost players. Let the young guys develop. This is where I want the Mets to go. Don't go into some free agent frenzy horse shit. Don't make any big splash trades for a Manny Machado or whatever. No, 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 no. Get yourself some solid players. You bring back a Jay Bruce who can lead that team, especially with the fact that the poor guy bought a house here after he got traded to the Mets. His wife and kids moved here. His kids were in school here. And then you traded him to Cleveland at the end of the season. You know, bring him back to New York. Let him be a leader of this team.
Yeah.
It'd be fantastic.
And I'll tell you, as far as the American League goes, the one thing that I'm interested in seeing is what are the Astros going to do as a follow-up? I mean, do they completely fall apart, or do they put together a decent season again?
I think they're going to, because the core of the team is signed for a long time, they don't have a lot of big-name free agents, I think they should be all right. They could do with maybe signing a, again, lower-cost, lower-tier, or under-the-radar free agent that could help enhance them, enhance the bullpen, really. Their pitching staff is fine. You know, most of the team is fine. The core of that team is good and it's solid. You know, when you start dicking with teams, that's when it all goes to hell. Look at the Cubs. They thought they were just going to go right on ahead and win a second World Series. You won nothing. The Dodgers, the most arrogant fucking team next to the Yankees. But maybe more so because they go out of their way every year to make a big splash. And what do? They choked in the seventh game of the World Series.
Yeah.
Good. That was deserved. Maybe you'll learn your lesson because at least the Yankees, even though the Yankees made a deal for somebody like Stanton, the Yankees' core of the team are all young players from the farm.
Yeah. And,
so
and, they, you, and the best part of it is not only did they choke in Game 7 of the series, they choked at home in Game 7 of the series.
Yeah, so, you know, and they – I'll tell you, I think I got a bigger thrill out of seeing the Dodgers choke than watching the Yankees get beaten by the Marlins in 03.
Yeah, no doubt. So,
or watching the Yankees get whooped four straight games by the Red Sox in the playoffs in 04.
Yep.
Because that's still one I'll never forget.
Well,
I don't care what
it
is.
And, yeah, and you know, the one thing that getting in toward the end of the year and the beginning of the new year, we've got another outdoor game coming up in the NHL. And, you know, the more they do this, the more I like it.
And guess who it is?
The Sabres.
It's the fucking Rangers.
Yeah, well, at least you're going to get a win out of this one because you're playing my Sabres and they're terrible.
Well, now hang on. The Rangers seem to always play shitty against bad teams.
True.
They play great against good teams. But, you know, although they had some real suck-ass moments in the last couple of games, I mean, they just pissed me off to no end in the games against the Devils, which was just embarrassing, and Toronto. Those were two games that they let get away completely, especially with the Devils game. You know, They were going great guns into the third period, and of course Lundqvist fell asleep at the wheel like usual. And they tried to blame it on the defense. And don't get out of the fucking net. Your job is to block it.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I just wish they could play this game in Shea Stadium, named for famous Cuban guerrilla leader Shea Stadium.
Speaking of which, I have got to tell you, this last week, because it's been so, quote, that other group that ripped off Dirk, Stig, Nasty, and Barry, since I've been listening to them so much, yesterday I finally had enough because everybody's making a big hoopla of, oh, it was exactly 50 years ago. Everybody loves to put an anniversary on everything.
Yeah.
It was 50 years ago today that Magical Mystery Tour was broadcast on the BBC. And I just basically went on Facebook and I said, you know what? Fuck you. Those imposters ripped these guys off. And I posted Piggy in the Middle. Do a poo-poo. That's all I have to say. Hey, diddle, diddle.
Yeah.
Man with a fiddle.
Yeah, and it was a crap movie anyway. I mean, Magical Mystery Tour really was. It was a
dumb. I actually can watch Magical Mystery Tour more than I can watch Help. Because yeah. Help really sucks.
Yeah, they were all pretty bad. Well, Hard Day's Night was good.
Hard Day's Night, it's got its moments. It does. It's a highly quotable film, and that you know, and the songs were good. Help had shitty songs, and it's dumb.
Yeah.
It's just dumb all the way through. And it's them – I can see why they didn't even like it because they felt like they were playing now caricatures, you know?
Right.
It was shitty writing is what it was. I've seen Magical Mystery Tour twice. I saw it on a bootlegged video in 1985 when I was, in fact – what's the word I want to use? I will put it delicately so as not to offend anybody. High as a fucking kite.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I was ingesting narcotics. And so I saw it whilst under the influence. And it sucked. Then I saw it when it finally made its American television premiere in, what was it, 2014?
Yep.
2015 on PBS. And I found it weirdly amusing. It was certainly far more amusing and watchable than Let It Be.
Yeah.
Let It Be. You want to talk about uncomfortable, you're like, ooh, ooh. I mean, what's the most quotable thing you can say about Let It Be? Whatever it is that you want me to play, that I'll either play or I won't play at all. Whatever it is that will please you, I'll do it. Ooh.
Yeah, ooh. How clever. How unique.
You know, it's like, ooh, Paul's being a douche, so George is going to be a passive-aggressive prick,
mm-hmm.
Right back at him, you know. Look, lads, the band, I'm just saying, you know, Mr. Epstein, he sort of said, put on suits, so he did, you know, but I always hear myself like I'm not trying to get you. Paul, you really are a prima donna motherfucker.
Pretty much. Well, you know, and it's funny because it, with the shows that we've done previous, up till about the last month or so, we've always had a focus on new music and, you know, interesting things that we run across either from publicists or just something that we happen to glom onto. And we haven't done that at all, really, for the past, four or five shows.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that there just is nothing out there to talk about.
You're absolutely right, but I'm very happy to say that coming up, we are going to be talking about interesting things, and interesting things like a very local band who got back together after a very prolonged absence. They played last week, and I would have loved to have gone to see them if I hadn't been so damn sick. But there is a compilation now out and available by them on Bandcamp, and I'm going to write the review, and it will be on Popdos, and it's a local band called the Rockin' Bricks. And this is a band from the 80s. I'm sure people are going to roll their eyes when I say the words power pop, but they were the embodiment of power pop in the early 80s, and again, a local band, no different than the Smithereens, no different than the Bongos, you know, local. These guys were from New Brunswick, New Jersey. And then following on from there in the weeks to come, there was this great band called the Flash Cubes, also from Jersey. So, and they had a lot of material, and I've got to sift through it because, you know, when we were talking about the Smithereens, you know, it made me go on something of a nostalgia trip, not just because of, you know, the pain of losing Pat Denizio, but because it reminded me of a time when things were genuinely exciting, you know, and that goes hand in hand with what you're saying right now. There hasn't been anything to talk about, you know. The memories that I have of those days, you know, in the early 80s, and there were clubs everywhere in New York City and in New Jersey, and you could be an original band and play, and there were so many of them. There were so many opportunities. That was the beauty of it, that a band like 2 Minutes Hate, who had only just formed, could go out and book a gig right away, you know?
Yeah.
The fact that there are some of those bands that were smart enough to keep a recorded document on hand, and for us to come back 30 years later and be able to listen to it and go, wow, I remember those days, and I remember them with such joy and appreciation. And, you know, it may be a cliche, but it is true that, you know, the older you get, the more you appreciate what you don't have anymore. Now, I will say this much. There's a caveat to that. You'll look like an idiot if you dress the part. And there are a lot of people that will still do that, I'm sorry to say, although I think they're more in the punk rock vein. But there are those of us who were in the more poppy vein, if you will, who I think none of us would put on our sleeveless T-shirts again or our you know, checkerboard van sneakers. Definitely wouldn't do that. But to see a band like the Rockin' Bricks return, I think it's absolutely fantastic. And it just, like I said, it reminds me of a time when the opportunities were endless, when the world was still in front of us, really.
Well,
did you know that Jesus was a Jew?
I have heard tell. And he wasn't.
Hey, and holy fucking Bible,
that's
son.
That's right. And he also wasn't a long-haired blonde guy from Oxford. So
I'm telling you right now, my odds are that, you know, if he really was born where they say he was born, he probably looked like Klinger.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
You know, swarthy, short, big honker, you know, very Jewy looking. And by the way, the name itself, Jesus Christ, is Greek. It's not even – there was nobody else. There were no other Jesuses. There were other Christs because Christs were anointed beings.
Right.
You know, if you were a Christ, you were higher up, if you will. The man's name was Joshua of Nazareth.
Right, Yeshua Bar-Joseph. So, yeah, Joshua.
Right, Joshua, son of Joseph, if we're to believe unless we're going to believe the story of the Virgin Mary, but I don't, you know, I'm not going down that path. But you know, getting back to what I was saying, it was really wonderful, and I almost wish that I had kept some of my old copies of the Aquarian from that period, where, you know, all the places you could go, like the Spiral and the Jetty and the Dirt Club. You know, there were places even on Staten Island, places we played at later on, like Nerys and Giggles, I think was the name of the place, and the Ferry Club, the Choir Loft, which actually was started by Patrick Barnes of Dirty Looks. The places we played in Manhattan, like, oh my God, why am I drawing a blank? The very first club we played, which we played twice. Oh, the Dive. That was the name of it. The Dive on 23rd Street, I think it was, either 23rd or 29th. Again, my memory is not perfect. RT Fireflies on the corner of Broadway and Bleecker. Kenny's Castaways, which ironically, when they closed, the last band to play there was the Smithereens.
All I want to do is go to City Garden and have Lemmy throw a bottle at me.
Go to City Garden, have John Leibowitz serve you at the bar, and go see who's going to do.
There you go. Oh, yeah, those were the days. And, you know, there was a bar on Elmwood Avenue in Buffalo called Nietzsche's. And that was – it may still be there. It was by Buffalo State University. And that's where bands like the Goo Goo Dolls would come and play and all of that stuff. And, it was that same kind of very dirty, very low light, you know, everybody was tripping. It was just, it was crazy, but it was great.
It was atmosphere. It was atmosphere, and it was always something new. It wasn't somebody coming in there like, I mean, we had our plethora, and I mean plethora of cover bands. Like, and they did great business. You know, everybody was always going gaga to see Crystal Ship or Tumbling Dice.
Right.
or Sweet Leaf, you know, but or Four Sticks. You know, we had all of those bands locally, and like I said, they did great Door. They really did. But there was nothing like going to see these bands in these shitty, smoky, piss-stinking, sweat-drenched little holes in the wall.
Yeah, that's it. And, yeah, unfortunately gone, never to return. But, you know, for the In Our Head segment this week, I want to see if we can take a look forward, because this year, even though you personally are ending things on a high note, which is fantastic, I think the world is becoming a very weary place. And I have no idea what this year has in store. And I just wonder what you see when you look ahead over these next couple of months.
On a personal side, I see hopefully good things and picking up basically where I left off in 2016. I consider 2017 the lost year,
yeah,
for all intents and purposes. You know, my work troubles and other things and not going on vacation, little things like that, barely picking up a guitar, all of it. You know, and I take full responsibility for all the things that I didn't do. But 2018, you know, I think is going to start on a good note, just right out of the chute, new job, going to see the Posies on their 30th anniversary show, acoustic at City Winery, planning my return to Memphis. There's a project that is still somewhat under wraps that you know about, but we can't really talk about publicly, that will most likely see the light of day this year, which when it becomes official, we will talk about it and shout from the rooftops about it, because yep, I'm really excited about it and very, very proud. I would not be averse to maybe playing a little bit more of an active role in a possible Punchline reunion, since this will be the 30th anniversary of the Wildflowers actually coming out.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's all of these things that have possibilities, and just getting my lazy ass back into the gym and feeling good physically and mentally as well. You know, that's really important, because I've been so negligent about it for so long now, and I feel a sense of guilt. But I think it's smarter than to come up with something, oh, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. These are not New Year's resolutions per se. These are attainable goals. These are achievable things. They're not in the realm of ludicrousness. Now, as for the rest of the world, I'm not sure, because I think the one thing that the world truly needs to do as a whole, and I don't care what your political stripes are, is everybody needs to just stop exactly where they are, take a deep breath, and step back for a moment, and exhale. Catch your breath, because people have been on autopilot and on for too long now. People are chronically angry. Like you and I have joked about, but it really isn't funny. People wake up and just want to be irritated and angered and offended. And they in turn want to go out and take their frustrations out on somebody else. You know, people who like to say Merry Christmas will be met with derision because you're not including everybody else.
Right.
Christmas is no. People have to stop doing this. People have to stop mansplaining. People have to stop womansplaining, because that's equally offensive, equally pandering, and equal bullshit.
Yeah.
Now, stop with your hashtags, stop with your sloganeering, stop with your tribal mentality, stop the divisiveness, and this goes across everything. We're not talking politics, we're talking about people. You know, people in Brooklyn who, you know, talk about, well, in the good old days, the neighborhood was shit.
Yeah.
Now, granted, you're being priced out, but what did you ever do when you were here the whole time? You didn't do anything about it. So you can't blame the people who have moved here and made it a better livable neighborhood. They've made it livable, period.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and just what it comes down to with me is I have never been a joiner. Curiously, I'm in a band now, which is kind of fun. And it's a bunch of guys who just get together and play Beatles music, which is even more fun. So, That's, you know, on a personal front, I couldn't be happier. I've learned how to do my job again this year. I've had to, because of a job change, I got to be excited about radio again. And right now, being excited about radio is kind of a weird thing to do because the business itself is going through the same massive conglomeration, and, you know, working for an independent, hungry radio station is a very good place to be for me because it suits me. So that's been fun, and I hope that continues into a more solidified personality for the show for this year. And, you know, the rest of it has all been riding along pretty well for the last couple of years. And, you know, it makes you always wait for that other shoe to drop. But, you know, my mom's been going through some health issues, which all, you know, seem to go and just disappear at the end of this year, which is fantastic. And so I'm the same way as you. I'm very optimistic on a personal front, on a grand scale. I would love to see people go back into themselves. They're just the same way you were talking about. Be who you are. Don't worry about what anybody else does. It doesn't matter. Don't worry about who anybody else is. It doesn't matter. Be who you are. Be your best self. And, you know, it's sounding like Biscaglia now, but still, just be who you are and everything else will fall into place. And if we could only get that through our thick skulls and stop trying to fix everybody else's life, it would be a lot easier. Do I see that happening this year? No, I see that situation getting worse. And it's only going to get more snarky as we get up to the midterm elections. And I think that, you know, the political system that we've got in place right now is a breeding ground for this pestilence that we have that just is permeating the American psyche right now. And I see them going back to the same well. Donald Trump, certainly, he's lived there for his entire life. He can't leave there. So the people around him who have seen some success out of that are going to take the cue, and things are going to get nasty. And this may be the most off-putting midterm election that we've had in my lifetime. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I see coming this year.
When you say off-putting, in what sense? Do you see it going in the direction of a sweep of the Democrats bringing in a new wave of people to oust the Republicans and therefore have a Democrat-controlled Congress? Or
I would love to, as much as I would love to see that happen, I just mean in the days leading up to it, I think what they're going to do is force the wedge in between what have solidified as the two sides in this country, deeper than it's ever been before. I would expect midterm election turnout to be lower than ever. And as far as who wins and who loses, it almost becomes academic. As much as I would love to see an opposition party, a real opposition party, to give some kind of balance, I think it matters less because the real business that needs to be done between people who are not in government. And I don't see them able to talk to each other anymore. I mean, as much as has been made in a very directed political way of the Supreme Court case with the guy, the baker who refused to bake cakes for gay people. Who the fuck cares? Bake a cake, make money. Just stop, you know? And we can't because everything's going to be an issue. And if it's that way, and if it's that bad now, it's going to be worse leading up to the elections. I do think the Democrats are going to win some seats. And I think that with any luck, they'll be in charge of both houses of Congress. But I don't think it's going to be worth it. It's a Pyrrhic victory. I think that what we will pay in a social price is much higher than what we will gain by having some balance and stability back to the government.
The sad thing is that civility costs nothing.
Right.
But people don't want to buy it. You know, they much prefer. I think people prefer right now, which shows my level of appreciation and faith in mankind, that they just like being angry.
Yep.
There's a comfort, a very sick and twisted comfort, that you can't have a reasonable, rational conversation about politics, which, of course, you know, never talk about politics or religion. Well, here's a perfect example. You and I have been doing this show in this format since February. And, you know, as much as I enjoyed every moment that we got to do Overnight America, it was a formatted thing because it was very specific.
Right. And time limitations and all that, yeah.
Right, and that's fine, and that's professionalism. This gave us the opportunity to actually talk. And yes, we do things in a very funny, loose, sharp-witted, acid-tongued, highly cynical way. But A, it's because we're older. We've seen more than our share. B, C, we're educated, and there's nothing wrong with being educated. For some reason, if you're smart, you're looked upon as being an elitist.
Right.
That's, I mean, who came up with that?
I blame Spalding Gray.
You know, my wife is going to open up something called the Pretentious Gallery. You know, all our parents ever wanted for us, certainly for our generation, was get a good education, get a job that makes you hopefully happy, and be able to save money and don't wind up in debt. What a person's politics are really doesn't matter. It's who they are as people.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. And yet, all of that has been negated. And it's been highly negated by the younger generation. And I don't think that's chauvinistic of me. I think it's just really part and parcel of the fact that young people do not take the time, will not take the time, to read and learn. You can feed them any bullshit, as personified by somebody like Bernie Sanders, and they'll buy it hook, line, and sinker without checking facts. This is the problem I have with most people. And I just think that by doing the show the way that we've been doing it, what I love so much about it, as an observer, because I actually go back and I listen to our shows and I think, man, that show was stronger than the last one. And then the following week, it's the same principle.
Yeah.
That show is even better. You know, it's not the comedy element. The fact is, it's a smart show. And it's a smart show because we talk about the things that matter. Not just music, not just books, not just movies, not just art or plays or doing shtick. But we talk about things that matter, and we talk about it from every possible angle. We talk about the Republican side and the Democratic side, and then the outsiders who are, in effect, the ones who want to destroy everything in between. Destruction is not the answer. And by the way, people, look up what the proper definition of anarchy is, because it's not what you tend to think of it
right,
as.
Right.
But the idea of coming together in a sense of rationality is always the main objective and goal of our conversations, because we always manage to bring it back full circle. So my statement here would be that my hope is, and it's a granted, it is just a hope, and it may sound cheesy, but my hope is that people will just stop for a minute before you speak, think, just take that one extra second, you know?
That one beat.
And it may change everything, because you don't have to go in with fists flying, feet flying, teeth gnashing, you know, guns ablazing, whatever. You just need to stop and think about what you want to say and then say it appropriately. You know, if we did the show in such a in a straightforward and stringent manner, we'd probably be on NPR, and that would make us boring as fuck, you know.
Right.
And we couldn't get away with the shit that we do. That's why Opie and Anthony are no more. But we're here, and we're out to get all of you.
Well, and on that happy note, Rob Ross, have a great new year. Feel better. I'll try to do the same. And with any luck, we'll both have voices back by the next time we get together.
To you and your family, I wish you a beautiful, wonderful, happy, healthy, and prosperous new year. To our listeners who've made this an incredible first year, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I wish all of you a happy new year. God bless, and let's hope for so much better in 2018.